There we go. Who am I? There we go. My name's Gary Grudzinskas. Gary's fine. Oh, so I expect a murmur on that. I own a company called Realize Learning. And what I do is I record videos and I teach online. And that's kind of my passion, but what the moneymaker for me is I teach certification classes. And these are classes that have the regular Microsoft official curriculum. However, people are expected to certify at the ends of these courses. And from years and years of experience of just teaching mock or teaching subject matter or going around giving seminars around the country and the Caribbean, it's a different ballgame. And one thing that I learned during that is that it's not just about the information you know, it's also how good you are at taking exams. And I've had grown men cry in my class before because they're so afraid of taking these certification exams. So my approach is going to be a little bit different. I'm not going to get up here and say, study this, study this, study this, bye-bye, have a nice night. What I'm going to try to do is help you, and especially help some of you who might not be the best at taking exams. These exams have a lot of different question types rather than just the multiple choice. So I want to dissect these different question types and make you ready for them. Also, to expose the different resources, expose probably not the word there, different resources that are available to you to study for these different exams that you have. Now, I'm going to just ask a couple of questions here. How many people are MCSA in Windows 7 already? Okay, a few. How many people have not taken a certification course with the new curriculum and are wondering what track that you need to go on? Oh, beautiful. You're at the right place. Okay, stay then, all right? So I'm going to go into a little bit more detail about exam types, about the track that you go through, and then we're going to get into some of the material that we have on this particular exam, which is a 689. The 689 is, not to confuse you here, 687 and 688 kind of combined. You're an MCSC in 7, pass this exam, congratulations, you're an MCSC on 8. You might be an MCSC on 7, by the way, and not know it. If you're an MCIPTP, MCITP, sorry about that, that's why I switched to MCSE, right? You probably are already an MCSE in 7. So, that being said, my background in certification, I'm going to concentrate a little bit more than probably you're used to on exam strategy. With that, further ado, here we go. That was the introduction, by the way. And we're going to talk about the different certifications. I'll spend some time on that so you can know the different tracks. We're going to take a look at the different resources that are available to you. And there's a lot of resources. Some of the resources a lot of people don't know about, and I'm going to try to share those with you. If you're like me, I cannot read a book and pass an exam. I cannot read a book and do hardly anything on a computer. I have to get on the computer. So I'm going to try to share with you some of the different hands-on experiences that you can do and what you can do to get that hands-on experience. How many people are going to take your certification exam here at TechEd? Okay, a couple. So there's resources for you guys too, and then resources for when you go home. The question types. It isn't just multiple choice anymore, but I also want to share with you what I've shared with some of my students that have to certify. I don't know if you knew this, Department of Defense, that you have to be certified now if you touch anything, basically, for them. So that's been a boon for my business, I'll tell you. It's kept me busy. I'm pretty much booked through the end of the year on this. However, it's a different ballgame when you have to certify rather than just knowing the material. You have to be good at taking an exam as well. And then we'll cover, finally, the knowledge domains. And this knowledge domain isn't broad and deep. There's a lot of material on it, but what I'll try to do is just highlight some of it to try to steer you in the right direction for when you take this exam. Before I begin, any questions? Okay. What we're trying to do here, tips for approaching exam questions. That's near and dear to my heart because I've seen it. I've seen people that can sit behind, I teach mostly Exchange Server, I've seen people that sit behind a computer and are wizards, know every PowerShell command, every PowerShell parameter, and can do anything on that thing, and you put a screen in front of them to where they have to certify, and they crumble, absolutely crumble. There is two things you're being measured on. One is how much do you know about the product, and the other one is how good are you at taking tests. And they're not necessarily the same thing. So I want to focus about half of what we're going to do today into taking the exam and some of the different approaches. I've been able to kind of fine-tune it, and I hope you enjoy what we're going to talk about. Identification and knowledge gaps. You have to know what's on this exam to know what you don't know in order to pass this exam. So we'll be going over some of the material that's on the exam. It's called the OD. They call it OD, Objective Domain, I believe is the name of it. And then finally, cover the objectives for 6, 8, 9. I'm not totally into these objectives. What I'm really kind of trying to concentrate on is getting you on the right track. And speaking of tracks, this target audience, exam for IT professionals are certified in Windows 7. It's okay if you're not. Again, this is very general that we're going to talk about as far as what the tracks are, what the new question types are, what resources you have. You could be SQL, you could be anything, and still benefit from that. So here we go. There's one thing that's here. There's one thing that's not here that's here. It didn't make sense. I know. It's late. MTA. So this is for, I got one of my students here who is a bartender, came into my class, and now he's a big wig at the University of Tampa, I guess, you know. But teaching those what we used to call career changers, you throw MCSE in front of them, and it's a bit of a leap to get to that level. So what they have now is called the MTA, the Microsoft Technology Associate. So that is at the bottom down here. So if you're just absolutely brand new to certification, that's probably a good path for you. And we have a lot of information out there for it. But how this works now, and I've gotten a lot of questions and it seems to be a lot of confusion on this, is you have the associate. And just stick Microsoft Certified Solutions in front of all these, and you pretty much know what you're talking about. The associate is a bare level. And then you have what's equivalent, I guess, to electives after that. So you become an MCSA, and then you become an MCSE in one of four different subject areas. Messaging, Exchange, Cloud, Desktop, and Server. So the path is the same for all of you to get up to the MCSA. How many people MCSA in 8? Hey, congratulations. Hi, Bob. How are you? How are you back there? Okay. No, great. Okay. All right. So the associate, then you have the expert. And again, the expert, think of it as an elective. Elective like you have at college or something. That you have to get the base kind of two-year degree, and then after that, you go more specialized. And same thing here. So what we're going to concentrate on is getting you this level as far as Windows 8 goes. Okay, and then finally on top there you have the master. And this is the, you know, where you pay a lot of money, go to Redmond, sit around, seven people drill you, you're taken into a room, blindfolded, I'm kidding, and have to really prove your worth on that. So there's a kind of top tier here. It's not out for 2012, it's not out for Windows 8, so right now the MCSE is the highest one that you can get as far as these two subject matters. Here we go. So again, put Microsoft Certified Solutions in front of it, and you got it. You got Associate, you got Expert, and then you got Master. And I guess that makes kind of sense. And that forms the pyramid. So if you're new to this, your path is pretty much the same. 410, 411, 412 to get the Associate. If you're already in MCSE in Windows 7, then it's just one exam, which is a combination of the three exams, which is 417. So once you get up there, then you can see in the back there, and we can answer any questions once we're done here, then you get to choose what path you're going to go. Server, desktop, messaging, cloud. So here we go, and notice how proud this person looks in the MCSC Windows 7. You get 689, and congratulations, you get a little certificate in the mail, a little card that identifies that you are an MCSA, what they call. They don't have the MCP anymore, really. So you kind of some limbo if you pass 410, 411, like that. As far as I know, they don't have. So here, where I didn't, I had to add a template in last minute. So it didn't see it. But if you're an MCITP, you're already an MCSA in Windows 7. So the path you might have, any MCITP or Windows 7 certified, okay. All right, did you guys get the notice in the mail? Did it surprise you? I didn't pass the test. How come they're giving them out now? So 687, 688, kind of equivalent of 689. And that is a certification path that you're interested in. Any questions so far about the certification path? Okay. And as I said, the people that just came in, I have kind of a different approach. I teach certification courses as far as my in-person training goes. So it's a little bit different approach than you might be used to. I really want to talk about these question types and how to get through these question types. The first one that we're going to start with is coming up. I forgot about this slide. These are all the different question types. And guess what? They're coming out with more question types. And what they're trying to get away from is the multiple choice. Again, you're just tested on basically knowing information. And we've had multiple choices for a long time. And it's getting more and more away from it. We still have multiple choice, but you're going to have these different question types. We only have a few that we have to go over in here. A lot of this stuff is on the developer side. We all know that they're kind of different than us, right? No offense to any developers that might be in here. The hotspot, how about this? So you try to get as much on the product experience as you can, hands-on type information. Because you're going to be asked several questions like this. What do you click in order to do this? What do you check in order to do that? So given this one, a few users have accidentally removed applications that they should not have removed. Where are you going to click? Remove add, remove programs. Yeah, add, remove programs. And that's where you click for it. So what does this tell you? It's not multiple choice. You don't have to go through elimination or anything like that. But you have to know your product. You have to know what happens when you click right there. And then you have to click right there in order to answer the question correct. Some of these are a little bit complicated. Choose 3. Choose 2. Choose 4. And some of them don't make sense. And if you've never seen that screen before, if you have no idea what that screen, what that dialog box does, then you probably need to get a little more hands-on experience. And that's coming up of how to get the hands-on experience. This one, choose the best answer. And these ones are kind of interesting. In IT, and I tell my students this all the time, it isn't about being smart anymore, it's about being fast. It's about getting in and fixing it and getting out as quickly as possible. Well, with restrictions there. And I'm sure none of you, but all of you have probably worked with an IT professional that's a little bit like that, that needs to know every gory detail of what they just did, that instantly go to regedit and try to be super smart as far as fixing a computer when really all it took is a reboot, and they could have been out there a half hour ago or something like that. So some of these answers will work, but you have to be kind of stupid in order to do that. A couple answers would work. An answer would work, but. And this is the big however here. I was going to say big but I'll say big however here. And that is, yeah, it'll work, but it's going to take all day. Yeah, it'll work, but it's going to tie up our network. Yeah, it'll work, but you're going to lose all this other stuff. So these are a little bit more difficult than just the multiple choice, because multiple choice, you have just one correct answer. With these, you have up to, you know, 4 out of 4 correct answers, and you have to decide which one works the best. I want you to think about this. Who put that there? I want you to think about this when you take these. Least amount of administrative effort. Again, be fast, don't be smart. Get in, fix it, and then get out. The lazy administrator, call this a lot of things. If you're an IT person, you're running around putting out fires all day, there's a better way to do it. Trust me, there's a better way to do it. So think least amount of administrative effort when you see this, and you can almost apply it. And then the giveaway. The giveaway is this word right here, requirements. They'll almost always give you the requirement, and you have to make sure that that best answer meets those requirements. So you should look for these key words. A key word is requirements. And if you have a lot of things there that don't meet the requirements, or some of them don't, just focus on that. Now here's an example question. A user reports to you that their computer has locked up after installing a new driver. Probably some of you know what the answer is. The computer locks up before the start screen appears. How do you bring back the system? Look at answer one, answer A. That works, but what's wrong with it? Yeah, you have to be stupid, man. Come on. That works, yeah, reinstall the operating system. Hey, I've dealt with people that's their first approach, right? System's hosed. And that works, but it doesn't make sense. This last one, I don't even know if you can edit the registry offline. I don't know what that is. And I put that in there on purpose. It's called a distractor. It's something in the answer that's put in there that doesn't make any sense, but you have to kind of know it doesn't make sense. It sounds good, but it just doesn't make sense. Now, between B and C, which one would you guess is the correct answer? B, why? Yep. There's variables there. Thank you so much. There's variables there. What are the variables? Yeah, what if you can't boot up in safe mode in the system? Well, you can almost assume that they put the driver in there and they're not going to be able to get it back. So it's this one. Yeah. See, I wrote this myself and I don't even know how to answer it. How about that? You're assuming they have restore points. What if they don't have restore points? What if they install, you take a restore point every time you do a driver, right? There you go. Yeah. I wrote this and I figured that the restore point was the right one, but that's a good point. Maybe they don't have it. There's a reason I don't write these questions, and you guys just saw it. Yeah, it is. It is. I'm sure they have somebody making sure everything's right with that. Or start the system in safe mode, roll back the driver. I think that's a pretty safe one. That's originally what it's kind of going for, but somebody pointed out a variable in the last session that I had, which steered me towards one, and now you've steered me towards the other one. But the point shouldn't be lost here. The point is, one of these works better than the other. And I eliminated this one because what if they installed an application before they install that driver? It's not necessarily going to stake a restore point, so they could lose some information on that too. So this also brings me to my next point, which is the multiple choice, the elimination. If you look at this, you eliminate two of them. You don't know what the answer is. So you got a 50-50 chance of getting that. And you certainly don't want to leave anything blank on these. Now, multiple choice, and I don't mean to be simple here, but this is the advice I always give people. This is the fight that you have when you get a multiple choice question and you don't necessarily know what the answer is. The first one, eliminate possibilities first. Almost always with the multiple choice where there's only one correct answer, there's going to be two out of the four, three out of the five, something like that, that you can eliminate just by the text of the question itself. Good idea. Mark questions you're unsure of. And I tell my certification candidates this all the time. I have a three-pass method that I like to share with you. First pass through the exam, mark the hairy questions. All these questions are pretty much weighted the same. So if you have a big, complicated build list, it's going to mark the same as one line with four answers that you know the answer to. You don't want to dwell on one question to the fault of other questions that you might have the answer for. So, three passes. First, just get down there on that machine all the answers that you're confident of and know. Secondly, spend some time on the questions that you marked. And with these exams, I know some of you are new to these exams, you can review marked questions. There's a little check mark up in the upper left-hand corner, mark the question. Then you can go back through and answer the questions that are a little easier, that you don't have to spend an inordinate amount of time on. And then finally, you got your doozies. You got your ones that's going to take some thinking and take some pressure that you have to answer. What you're trying to do that with that is get all the answers that you possibly can, and don't spend all your time just dwelling on one question, wondering if it's right, and throw you off to where you leave 10 blank because you ran out of time. You should have a few passes through all of it. And they say it's untrue, but I found it to be true. Sometimes in question 47, you have an answer or a good idea of what question 15 is, and question 32, what question 4 is. So by going all the way through, you can hit those different things that you have there. The don't trust your first choice. I actually changed this slide. The slide before said trust your first choice, and I say no. I say I've been there many times where you do B, hey, B, perfect. Okay, B, it's B. Read C and D, because maybe C and D tells you what's wrong with B, why B doesn't work. Make sure you read all the different questions when you have a multiple choice scenario. And best practice. There's a lot of best practices from Microsoft, and they do this on purpose. They're trying to steer you the right way, let's just say. So the best practice, if you know the different best practices that you have, then that's going to fit into that answer pretty well. And finally, no question scores more than another question, and that kind of just supports my point of don't dwell on the real hairy questions, the ones that are scary, the ones that are complicated. Do your first pass and get rid of the ones that you know the answer to. And then finally, fight to the bitter end on a question. Don't give up on any of these. Do the elimination process. Don't just mark it and go on. And for goodness sake, don't leave a blank, because those will be marked wrong. And at least guess. I mean, you got it, right? You got a 25%, 20% chance, something like that, of answering that question correctly. Now, finally, the case study. Okay, I rearrange these things. That's why I keep saying finally. The case study. And this case study has thrown several of my students off because they read the case study from top to bottom, thinking they have to remember every single detail in that case study. These case studies can be 2-3 pages long. And what they do is they say, here's a company. It's usually a fake company, I should hope. Here's their present infrastructure. Here's what they want to do. Here's some restrictions. Here's some requirements. Go. It doesn't really give you the information, but it's there. What I recommend to you, you can do it any way you want. What I recommend is start by briefly reading the case study. Don't get bogged down in details and look for different keywords like requirement, VPN, people complaining, their infrastructure has this fault or that fault. And just kind of key in on those, but don't dwell on it. Some people recommend don't even read the case study, just go back. But I like the context. I like knowing the context, knowing the company, reading the question, and going back to the case study. Look for keywords in the question. And the keywords in the question is going to allow you to return to the case study and pinpoint the one sentence, and I'm not exaggerating, the one sentence that applies out of the 57 sentences that are in the case study. There's only one part that counts in that case study, so you want to find that as quickly as possible. Ignore the information that doesn't apply. What you're going to see is nobody cares that you're a network administrator at contoso.com. Nobody cares that they have some old Windows 98. Nobody cares they got a Windows 2003 server. There's going to be stuff in that case study that doesn't matter. Just ignore it, because sometimes you get wrapped up in the answer, so you're thinking, I have to figure out this 2008 and 2003 server. Why they put it in there? Well, they put it in there because they're trying to get you to pinpoint the information that you actually need to know to pass the exam. And then finally, and I've run into this, double check the answer on the case study. Make sure that it matches up to the requirements on the case study. And that's a key word in your case studies, the requirements. What do they have to do in the case study? And then finally, please don't run out of the room. This is the hardest question my students have. This is the one that they always get hung up on. And I want to talk strategy here. I stripped the technical information out of this because I didn't want to put something up that people didn't understand, but everybody understands. I'm sorry, making a peanut butter sandwich. Hopefully you do. So I'm talking strategy here. They don't always give you how many answers you have. So the idea is you have to pick out what tasks and what sequence those tasks go in. The mechanics of this is real simple. Select, move it over, and then you can move it up and down on this list over here. Notice five blanks, five spaces, but they don't necessarily choose three steps. But I put this information in here, and hopefully I wrote this right. One of those makes absolutely no sense, so you can eliminate it. Another one leaves you unsatisfied. And the reason I put this in here is sometimes they'll have a step, that step you want to do very much, but when you read that step, it doesn't make sense at the end of it. And what you want to do here is you want to put that lid back on your peanut butter jar because you don't want to leave it open, but you can't throw it away because what if there's peanut butter left? I'm serious about this. If you have a task with these things that seems to make sense, seems like it'd be the final capper on what you're supposed to do, but it doesn't make sense, eliminate it. So then you're down to three. And this one's pretty easy, but they get a little bit complicated. Now I'm going to make a plea for getting hands-on experience. I'm going to show you how. I'm not going to just tell you to do it. I'm going to show you how. Because if you don't have hands-on experience, it's hard to think about what these steps are because it's a little bit difficult just reading a book what these different steps are. So hopefully you see here, open the jar, remove the slices, and why not put one before the other because they're still in the bag, okay? And then merge the slices together and enjoy. This is the one that throws most people off. What I recommend, when you see one of these on the exam, mark, go on. Get the ones that you know. Okay, now resources. And these resources are available for pretty much any exam that you're taking. I think on the development side, there are a little less resources, let's just say, and probably IT Pro, there's more. Here, right here at Tech Ed, the top one, the hands-on labs, especially you folks that are taking the exams here, go to the hands-on labs. You have these little books. I don't know if I brought my book, but you guys all have them. The little book that has and lists all the different hands-on labs that are available to you. A lot of those are going to be directly pertinent to passing this exam. And again, if you're like me, I cannot read a book. I have to mess up the server before I actually read the white paper on it because I need that context to help me with it. So go down to the hands-on labs, and you could even go down there and say, hey, I'm studying for the 689. Here's the different objectives that are required for it. I need to learn about the Microsoft Deployment Toolkit. What do you got in Microsoft Deployment Toolkit? And we have people down there called technical learning guides that would be happy and thrilled to walk you through it, tell you what you need to know, go to the labs. The labs aren't terribly long, and get that hands-on experience, especially for those that aren't great at book learning. The study hall is right over there, two doors down, as they say, and there's a lot of resources in there. There are study exams. We got Measure Up. We got Transcender. We got online books, and we have e-learning on there. It can get a little loud. I worked in there yesterday, and it's mostly us people with green shirts out in the hallway talking because we're all trainers, and we cannot help ourselves. There's headsets. We'll even give you headsets if we're too distracting out in the hallway. And you can sit in there and quietly study for these exams. We've got a place for you to study for this. And also, again, test-taking ability. The more practice tests that you can do, the more skills you develop in coming up with the proper answer. And then the live sessions. I mean, this is the heart of tech ed, right? And yeah, I guess I'm telling you, hey, go to a session. You're a tech ed. Go to a session. It's great. But pinpoint, right? If you're going to be passing these exams in the near future, and it has nothing to do with SQL, nothing wrong with that, go to the Windows 8 different ones. And again, try to pinpoint the gaps you have in your knowledge base in order to focus in on what you need to know and what you know you don't know in order to pass the exam. And then I will say this, a little plug here. We do have 50% off certification exams. So, you know, save you some money. It might be worth a shot for you to take them here. I believe it's just for here and not 50% off. You grab the voucher and take it 6 months from now. Now, hands-on experience. Just relate a quick story here. It won't take too long. When I was first starting out in the 90s, I had to decide between two certifications, CNA and MCSE. I decided CNA because, you know, what's this MCSE thing? Microsoft, what, Novell? Come on. So I go to get the product. I go to get Novell NetWare. Anybody remember Novell NetWare? Anybody? Anybody? Sorry. It was a good, fine product. So I try to get the product, no go. And they give you some, guys remember this? They give you like a floppy disk, and that has a license on it. But that doesn't work, so try the other floppy disk. Call Novell, get on hold, and all this kind of stuff. And then Microsoft, 180 days, you take your NT 4.0, here you go. We got a white paper on how to install it. There you are. So guess what I decided? No CNA for Gary, MCSE. And as things turned out, is probably a wise choice. But you can get your hand on these products. You can get your hand on just about any products that you have. So here you go. Download Windows 8 Enterprise Edition Evaluation. So you can try all these different products out. They blow up after a while, but you know, you might be able to put it on another computer or something like that when you run out. And it's enough time to get to know the product, especially on the server side of it. So let's say that you don't have a lab at home. Let's say that you had your office. Let's say you had your office and got kicked out of there because your daughter needed her own room. All right, relating a personal story there. And you don't have any computer to put all this stuff on. You just have a laptop or something like that. These virtual labs from TechNet are terrific. There's no reason in the world why you cannot get hands-on experience for all the different products from Microsoft that you're studying for. All you need is a fairly fast internet connection. I wouldn't even say high-speed connection, and a browser. And pretty much everybody has that. It'll step you through the labs. Sometimes they get laboriously slow, but hey, bring lunch, right? Be patient with it. And so you can get your hands on the product. And I can say this, when I take an exam, I passed 40 so far. Somebody actually asked me how many I've passed, and I looked it up. When I'm taking the exam, I actually visualize the product. And if I don't have that visualization of the product inside of my head, I get confused and frightened when I see something if I haven't actually seen the product of it. For goodness sakes, you can get hands-on experience by downloading an evaluation or by going to the TechNet virtual labs and running the labs that they have in there. Okay. Then we have Microsoft Learning. Sorry, I have the 415, 416, but there's a lot of e-learning, absolutely, positively free. Some of it costs, but a lot of it's free. And you can go through there, and you can learn about the different products that you have. Then there's, I don't have a slide for it, TechNet. Just go to TechNet, type in what you're looking for, and you can probably find it. All right, and then near and dear to my heart as a trainer here, there is a Microsoft official curriculum. You can go to a class. You can get instructed by an instructor, by an MCT. They have the labs. They have all that stuff built in. And you can see this one is only a three-day class, a fairly short class. I know this is pricey. I know this isn't always in your budget. I know you need your bosses to send you to these different courses that you have. but that's an alternative that you have as well. So those are the different resources. Any questions about the resources before we get into the details of the exam? You're supposed to wait 8 seconds, by the way, if you're wondering why the awkward pause here. Okay. Exam 689. So, first off, they always kind of make us say this. I can't disclose anything on the exam, but I can certainly disclose what they tell you to know for the exam. So any questions, I'll try my best to answer it. I don't want somebody to come in here and stripping me of my MCSE, right? And then the walk of shame out of the building. Grab the bus on the way home. 700 is passing. And again, each question correct is the same points. I need to change that. It's not 1 point, right? There's, let's see, 70 questions, 1 point. I scored a 70 on this, perfect score. So that's not quite. No partial credit, right? A lot of people look at these big, big hairy questions, think it's the same. It's not the same. Each exam has a cut score. And the cut score, pretty much these days, is always 700. And I'll say, the last certification exam I took, 700, baby, 700. It made me feel like I it made me feel empty, to be honest with you. Empty and a little bit refreshed. Yes, Bob Withers. Okay, there you go. Bob, that didn't make any sense. There you go. There you go. There you go. But if you score a one in golf, that's great. But if you score one on this, it's bad. But I get your point. I get your point that you have with it. Some questions are not graded. Big surprise there. I don't know. Most people at Microsoft don't know. I don't think anybody in this room knows. But there are different beta exams put in there so they can refresh the pool. How this works is you have a pool of a whole bunch of questions, and then they pick and choose 50 to 70 questions out, and then there's your exam. And they're always, nowadays anyway, they're always changing this, adding questions, removing questions, and they have to get some kind of metrics on, okay, well, these people scored really good on all these other parts of it, but they didn't score very well on this exam or this question. Maybe there's a problem with the question. So be aware of that you don't know which ones they are, so you try to answer them all pretty much the same. And contrary to popular belief, I hear this all the time, that you're going to be asked a little survey before you take your exam. How much experience do you have with this? Do you have 1 year, 1 to 5 years, 2 to 5 years? And people say, oh man, answer no experience, then you get the easy questions. That's just not true. That's just metrics that they have on it. But hey, feel free to answer. I have no experience on this, and maybe you will get all the easy questions that are on the exam. These are the three or four major types that you have here. The interactive drag and drop, correct order, and point and shoot. The point and shoot, by the way, is you click on the screenshot of a dialog box or something like that. Here's the objectives. Anybody notice something about this? And I went and double-checked. Anybody notice something funny about this? It doesn't add up. Exactly. And I went back and checked. I thought the person that gave me the base slide here messed up on it or something, but it's not. I think what it is, it's two exams rolled into one, right? It's 687, 688, into 689. So you're going to be questioned on all these. Now, I have little bit of information about all these different sets of objectives. So we'll be going over those and maybe a practice test or two to kind of test your knowledge of it. So now we've gone from, okay, how do you approach passing an exam? What kind of resources do you have? What can you study? How can you get your hands on the product? But now we're going on the technology behind it. First, install an upgrade to Windows 8. Configure hardware and applications, remote access mobility, there we go, backup and recovery, resources, and using cloud services finally at the end of it. If you haven't noticed, there's kind of a push to cloud services. I don't know if you guys have been aware of that. Install and upgrade to Windows 8. So with this, how do you get up to from XP to Windows 8, Windows 7 to Windows 8, Vista to Windows 8, and what's the kind of path that you go. And then what you should do when you're looking at these different exam objectives is, what don't I recognize? Because everybody's assuming that you have a base knowledge. And with this exam in particular, you're supposed to be an MCSC in Windows 7 already. So hey, upgrade, I got it. VHD, I got it. Windows to go, wait a minute. What's Windows to go? And it basically, you fly around with a little USB, plug it in, and there's your Windows to go. Okay. So you try to concentrate on those. Migrate and configure user data. And this is going to be not that much different. So if you're looking at an upgrade exam like this, one good approach you can take is just concentrate on what's different. And there's not a whole lot different about the user state migration tool or the Windows Easy Transfer, but you should know how to use those. And I know that there's labs as far as those go. Anybody use those two products? Use? Okay. Work pretty well? Yeah, it works nice. And the user state, in case you didn't know, that's all the bells and whistles that end users love. IT pros like ourselves, we can, you know, hey, good, I get to configure it again. Awesome, that's great. End users, where's my favorites, right? So you try to get all that information that they have, their desktop, their pretty little themes. All the little end user stuff that they know and love and want to come to their new computer because, you know, that they use all that kind of stuff before. So that's the user state that they're talking about. Now, architecture. When I look at something like this, what I do is, there's only one thing on here you probably need to memorize, right? And that's the second line, third line there. 1 gigabyte of RAM, 2 gigabytes of RAM. And unless you're Job, you might get a little impatient with having that much RAM on your server. But have you noticed something? Have you noticed that the footprint of these operating systems is getting to be less and less and less as it goes on? It kind of crowned with one certain operating system that was very slow. And then it started speeding up. As far as those things, that will remain. And so 2 gigabytes. Yeah. Look at the top there. 32-bit for 32-bit and 64-bit processor for 64-bit. Yeah, probably need that, don't you? All right. And optical drive. Yeah. If you're going to install this from a DVD, it's probably a good idea that you have a DVD drive available to you. I'm being sarcastic a little bit there, but again, focus on what you just need to know. Try to ignore the rest of it. And upgrading Windows 8, Windows 7, notice, kind of a clean little upgrade path there. Not always the best way to do it. Anybody remember Windows 3.1 to Windows 95? Anybody around then? Did I just date myself? Not the smoothest cat in the world, was it? Eventually you just said, just wipe it out. Let's just start over again. So we'll see how that goes. Windows Vista and then Windows XP. So you can almost guarantee you're going to be asked, well, let's see. It's likely you might be asked a question about this and have to know the different upgrade paths. All right, hardware and applications. Hard store applications. Yeah, store applications. Anybody implementing store applications? Those are the formerly known as Metro applications that you have. Raise your hand if you've implemented these. Oh, wow. Hey, I wasn't expecting that. What'd you implement? Oh. Okay. Yeah, that's good to hear. And I, like a lot of you, got my Windows tablet, my Surface, and all of a sudden, Windows 8 makes a lot more sense, let's just say, since I have a touchscreen. Yeah. The gentleman in back of you, what are you doing?
Not so much, but we have mostly just change for this.
Are you doing any? Oh, slide, side loading. We'll get in a second. You doing any side loading? Okay. All right. Thanks, guys. I appreciate that. And configure Hyper-V. Yeah, Hyper-V, not Windows Virtual Server or Virtual PC 2005. Hyper-V in Windows 8. And you can guess you need 64-bit in order to do that. That's the next slide coming in here. And yeah, it's full-blown Hyper-V. Full-blown Hyper-V. So you can do virtual machines and have a lot of fun with it.
There are limitations.
Oh, what are the limitations? Okay. So they lied to me. Okay, that's fair enough. No, I believe that. I believe that. But you have to know Hyper-V all of a sudden. Wait a minute. This isn't server. This is a desktop. Yeah, desktop with Hyper-V. How about that? Okay. So the Windows Store download Metro style applications. Probably the most what you'll be doing here is this little ditty right here. Of turning them off so people can't go to the store, because confusion sets in from the IT pros that I've heard back from of, hey, I want to go download this app, you know, and it says I need an account, and I don't have an account, and what do I do with it? And then I open this, and then I'm confused now. I don't know, anybody roll out Windows 8 and turn that off? Okay, all right. Same person that's rolling out the apps, turn that off.
Well, a lot of them are actually doing that on the server.
Yeah. Oh, on the Surface, too. Okay.
Well,
on the servers. Yeah. Oh, boy. Yeah, people do that? Yeah. Yeah, so if it's possible, they'll do it eventually, right? Okay. So, and as you know, a Microsoft account, and just a quick personal story here. The Microsoft account didn't really make a lot of sense to me until I installed Windows 8 on my laptop. And all of a sudden, I log in and, wow, how did it know that I had a tree screensaver? How did it know that green is my thing? And then open up an Office document. How did it know that I had all these other documents opened as well? So that's where it makes a lot of sense. So there's going to be a push. There's going to be a change for people to actually have a Microsoft account that's tied into the enterprise account, that's tied into all the other stuff that they have with it. So kind of a transition period. So, oh. All right, side loading. Get some a lot of questions on the side loading. There's uploading, there's downloading, and don't you love when people say, oh, can I get your USB so I can download your stuff there? Did that bother anybody else? Maybe not. But side loading is you load these applications, you approve these applications on the server level, and they're side loaded into your Windows 8 box. You can control these different apps. Sorry, it's not an application, it's an app, a Windows 8 app. So these side loading questions get a little hairy. It seems kind of simple, but you have this whole process on the server where you have to guard those different applications, approve those different applications, and let people have those different apps available to them. Okay, and client Hyper-V, and here we go. Guest OS can be 32-bit, 64-bit. This one has to be 64-bit. CPU has to have a SLAT, a second layer address tabling. VM for client server, same technology as Hyper-V with some limitations. So here's a question. And you just got the information on the last slide. Hopefully you read it real quick here. What are the two minimum hardware requirements to run client Hyper-V on Windows 8 clients? Choose two. By the way, you get questions like this too. At least they told you how many questions. And what you'll see, instead of a circle radio button, it'll have the select button, which is a box to let you know you have that. Any answers? Yeah. I want to point out something else here too. Is the first one and the second one kind of knock each other out. And you see a lot of that on these different exam questions. That one answer kind of eliminates the other answer. You can't have two. There can only be one as far as those two answers go. So that's an elimination process. There you go. Okay, remote access and mobility. This, I want to emphasize this. This is the coverall. You see this on every one, and it throws some people off. This objective may include, but it's not limited to. This means that, yeah, you got to know what a wire is, you got to know what a keyboard is, you got to know what this is and that is. So you see that in front of everyone. Mostly, don't look at that and say, oh, they're going to ask me a whole bunch of stuff that's not on the objectives. They're not going to ask you a whole bunch of stuff that's not on objectives. But you have to assume some kind of base knowledge that people are going to be taking these things. You have to assume they know what a keyboard is. You have to assume they know what a client is. You have to assume they know what a network connection is. You have to assume they know what a VPN is. So that's the answer to that. Mobility options, offline file policies, power policies, Windows to go, there we go, and sync policies and Wi-Fi direct. So if you look at that, you can almost pinpoint, right, some of the things that you're not familiar with, and then just go bing it, and you should have some answers for it. Security for mobile devices, and this is where it's all going, isn't it? This is where some of the confusion is. This is where, folks, we got a problem, and that is everything was going fine, and I'm sure some of you are in this situation. Everything's going fine, and then the CEO or CIO comes in with their iPad and says, can I get my email from this? And you say, yeah, you're the CEO. Of course you can. Then everybody else wants to do it. But where are they going with that device? They're going all over the red light district on the internet. They can go anywhere on that thing. They're bringing it home. They're bringing it to church. They're bringing it to the coffee shop. They're bringing it everywhere. And then they're bringing it inside of your network. So Windows 8 and Windows Server 2012 has protections for us now, quite a few protections, and this is brand new stuff that you're going to have to learn in order to pass these exams and exist in today's IT market. I don't know if you've looked at statistics lately, but laptop sales aren't doing real well. However, tablet sales are going through the roof. If you look at all the kind of cool technology, it really is about the tablet. Go out there after we're done and look at this posture. We never had that before. People sitting there looking down. I've seen people sitting there talking to each other, going on things, and I'm guilty of it too. As soon as you get a smartphone, you got one of those. These things are terribly convenient. However, they're not really this guarded enterprise network that we've had before. So some of this you have to be careful of. Location settings, and all of a sudden, and especially, I teach mostly Exchange, so I might rely on that a little bit. You know, attorneys are deciding a lot of our IT stuff. You know, is it private? Do you really need to know where everybody is with these different devices that they have? Is it legal to know? Do you want to know? Should you know? Things like that. So, and remote wipe. Don't get me going about that one. Is it their device? Is it our device? Did we supply it for them? Did they bring it in? If we wipe it, what about pictures of their kids and their honeymoon? Did we wipe those too? Yeah, we wiped those too. But you know what? You're fired, so you don't work in my company anymore. Whatever. It brings up a whole bunch of different things there. Installation on USB drive. Here we go with Windows, Windows to go. And what this is meant for is a rapid deployment of Windows 8 without doing a deployment strategy. You literally go around with a little USB device, put it into the computer, and there you go. You got Windows to go. It requires UEFI, kind of the new BIOS thing there. Must use Windows 8 Enterprise, and it has to have the Enterprise SKU to it to create this. And the host needs to be Windows 7 or Windows 8. But again, Windows to go, and that's what it is. I can't go into detail, but it's kind of that simple. Limitations, no hibernation, no internal disk offline, which is a good idea, right? You don't want somebody Windows to go on your computer and then getting access to your hard drives. That sounds like a great strategy there. The protection module is not used, and Windows recovery environment is not available. But still, cool little thing that you can do with Windows 8. Backup and recovery, this should be pretty quick here. There we go. So, you back up and you recover. However, there's some new stuff in here. There we go. Refresh and reset. And this could be very dangerous if you don't know the difference between the two of them, right? And it doesn't ask you. It doesn't say, you know, it does the you're sure, but you've always seen that and clicked OK before you even read it, right? This one, you got to make sure that you're getting the right one. Different recovery options, the file history. It's kind of previous versions, but a little bit different. Previous versions, Windows 7, a lot of people don't know this too. Pretty much all your documents inside of there, if they're on the C drive, if it's enabled, it pretty much keeps all the previous versions. And it's very, very intelligent to not take up a lot of disk space because it's smart about the deltas. It's smart about the differentiation between files. And it can just kind of sort on block level. Now, in other words, you have a document, 10 copies of a document, 10 previous versions of a document. It's one document, and then a bunch of changes. Then it magically puts it in there, applies the changes of which one you bring up. But file history, kind of something new. And file history is previous versions with a twist. And your goal is to find out some of those different twists that you have there. File history sounds better in previous versions, right? No? Huh? Yeah, shadow copies, previous. I don't even think they call them previous versions. I think I'm dating myself here. But you do go to the previous versions button, right, the tab. Right, question. And hopefully it's A or B. This one got by me. I'm sorry. I changed the template. You manage a computer that runs Windows 8. You notice that the computer startup time has significantly increased. And it's not on. Oh, it is on here. What do you do for that? Sysconfig, right? Different startup options that you have. And there we go. And never mind B and C and D. Those are irrelevant to what we're doing here. Okay, resource access. And you can see these ones, if you've taken a look at some of these other ODs, objective domains, this one's pretty nicely short. Short and sweet as far as this one goes. Some of them are very, very long, very complicated. Data storage. Not included. Resolve data storage issues. Manage pools. What's a pool? Manage data availability using branch cache. Branch cache is still branch cache, but it's not a huge POA to deploy it. Branch cache is a great idea, in case you haven't heard of this. A lot of people are going to branch offices. And these branch offices aren't necessarily a brick-and-mortar place with an entrance and a little lobby and all this. It's somebody with a mail stop. It's three people that are over here. It's four people that are over there. So it isn't necessarily this kind of idea branch office that we had before. So how about we avoid the WAN link and just cache the information that they're pulling off the server at the data center or the major headquarters. There's two types of it. There is hosted and distributed. This is easy to remember. A hosted means you have a server keeping track of all this. But the more interesting one, is the branch office cache or the distributed cache mode. So with the distributed cache mode, you don't have a server dedicated to keeping the cache of all the different data that's coming out. If you download something from the server and I download that same document, I pull it off your machine. And there's just a few things in order to get this connected with it. Then, clients and devices. So, different mobile devices. And here we go with this mobile device stuff. Manage Exchange ActiveSync on mobile devices. What they've done is they take ActiveSync, which used to be just for your Windows 6.5 phone. Anybody have one of those? Had one of those? Okay. And you had a thing called ActiveSync, which actively synced it. This is back when Microsoft Active Desktop, active, kind of like local news, right? Everything is active for them. All right. So mobile devices. And again, these different things for mobile devices, if you're going to look at one of the changes to Windows 8, it's obviously mobile devices that you have. And recovery solution. Reset, refresh, file recovery, file drive, and all this. And here we go with the difference between reset and refresh. I'll read this to you. Computer reset, the PC boots into Windows recovery environments. Windows ERE erases and formats the hard drive partitions on which Windows and personal data reside. So make sure you want a reset before you reset. And guess what? No undo button if you have with this. Windows RE installs a fresh copy of Windows. The PC restarts in a newly installed copy of Windows. Thorough option overwrites all sectors on a single pass there. So reset is as easy as click, click, click. But recovering from a reset you didn't mean to do is probably a little bit more work than click, click, click. And then we have refresh. RE scans the hard drive. It finds the data, finds the apps, and puts them aside. Then it installs a fresh copy of Windows. It takes all that stuff it put aside and puts it back. So you can see a refresh. Not too bad. Probably something you see doing. A reset, harsh. So you really need to know what the difference is. And hopefully you do. If you ask that question, you know what to do about that. Okay, not preserved, file type associations, we can get over that, right? That's not too hard. Display settings, yeah, just change your display, sir. And Windows firewall settings are changed too. That might or might affect you, but do your firewall settings through GPOs. Refresh and reset from the start screen, you can see here. You go down, refresh your PC, you click next a few times, and everything's refreshed. Just make sure you get the refresh and reset straight before you do it. And lastly, look at this. We're almost done here. Manage Windows using cloud services and desktop optimization pack. Pronounce that correctly. Probably a few people. MDOP? MDOP, anybody? Okay. It has a lot of features inside of it. A lot of things that you can do that you couldn't do normally. So, manage clients by using Windows Intune. Any Intune people here? Okay, we move. Dealer? Okay, we move on. But Intune, the idea is to, you know, do all the updates and update groups and make sure that thing is just humming along. Didn't sell very well. And public cloud services. And just think of SkyDrive. SkyDrive is something that I'm really digging on since I came out here to TechEd. That all my this deck on my SkyDrive, everything pretty much on my SkyDrive now. And the convenience of that is wherever you go, there's your stuff. You don't have to put a separate folder in there and make sure you do the syncing. It gets a little complicated, but you can put everything on SkyDrive. And also, just as a practical note, when and if you roll out Windows 8. This thing confuses people when they click on save and then, oh, what's a SkyDrive? Well, it's a thing up there. You got 2 gigabytes and save it up there. So be able to answer those questions. And Office 365 is another big thing I see happening out there. I know you switched to Office 365. A lot of educational institutions switching to 365. I'm seeing this a lot. At first, and they changed the name of this, 10 good times. BPOS, remember that one, anybody? Exchange Online? Okay, it's all changing now. And finally, monitor and maintain clients using the Microsoft Desktop Optimization. I'm having trouble with that one. But this, anybody using this, what do you use it for?
We use Dart for remote image monitoring.
Okay, remote image monitoring.
Yeah.
And what do you do with that? Nice. Very nice.
I'm getting ready to stand up BitLocker management and monitoring.
Nice. You're going BitLocker, the full BitLocker? Not BitLocker to go? The full BitLocker. Anybody else? Add MDOP? Okay. And the suite application virtualization, AppV. I guess somebody rolled out AppV. And application virtualization, think of it this way. A lot of people, they RDP into a server, they run one application. They get done running that one application, they log off the server, hopefully they end or disconnect their session instead of just, what's the right one? end the session instead of just disconnecting from the session? Well, how about we trick them? And by tricking them, what I mean is we can put an icon on their desktop, they click it, they think it's running on their local computer, but ha ha hee hee, it's actually running on the server. You can imagine this takes some complications as far as the server goes, but the idea is that you have that one application and you can run it on a lot of different desktops, a lot of different applications that you have there. So app B, user experience virtualization. One big thing in the last one I did for Windows 8 is this idea of the virtual desktop infrastructure. That people, wherever they go, whatever device they have, their desktop resides on a server somewhere. And there's a lot of complications with this. It hasn't really taken off. I can guess how many hands I'm going to have. Anybody go full implementation on VDI? There we go. I was expecting one, but I got zero. The recovery tool set, and there we go, the recovery tool set. And then BitLocker administration and monitoring, also known as MBAM, which is a great acronym when you think about it. So BitLocker, the administration of BitLocker, you know, one of the dangers of encryption is what do you encrypt? The stuff that's important. What do you lose? The stuff that's important. So keep that in mind. And that concludes our look. Let me just wrap up here. Remember to get the hands-on training, as much hands-on experience as you can get, and you know the resources to do it. Also, when you take the exam, be strategic about it, and the best luck to all of you. I appreciate your time today.